And a good Saturday morning to you. I can tell you Andy Lindis is taking the day off today. We'll talk to Andy next week. And in the meantime, it's our friend Luke Panic, the deck and porch specialist from Lindis Construction, among other things. Luke, good morning. Good to hear from you.
Good morning. How are you, Denny?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and all the good folks at Lindis Construction. Yeah, I mentioned it earlier this morning that you were going to be on. So if our listeners have any question, it doesn't have to be about decks or decking, but taking the opportunity while you're on the air with us is take advantage of Luke's expertise. By all means, call in or text, whatever is easier for you. And it doesn't have to be about decks or decking. It could be about porches. It could be about any home improvement project, because those regular listeners know that Luke grew up in the business of construction. So he knows his stuff, building his own home, etc. So by all means, if you have deck questions, great. Any other home improvement question we'll take as well, either by phone or by text, 651-461-9226. You want to call in your question or send a text, 651-461-9226. Well, what have you been up to, and what have the listeners and customers been up to? Are you building a lot of decks?
Yes, we are. We've got a lot of decks going. We're booked out until spring with deck projects, so we've got a nice, heavy backlog of decks, and so that end of our business is continuing to grow.
You know, we always mention that you're a deck and porch specialist. What about the porch construction? When last time you and I talked, there was a lot of interest in that, people staying in their homes, adding to them. Is that still true?
It is. It's a combination of people who are looking for shade, bug-free areas, and some people looking for, you know, an additional, basically, living room where that's heated and cooled. So we've seen an influx of both kinds.
I was thinking, Luke, about decks, and when people have certain things in mind for their homes. I mean, is there a mistake, or are there mistakes, common ones that people make when planning a deck?
Yeah, I'd say the most common mistake is probably two things. One, they underestimate the space that they need for a deck. A real common request is to have an area for a dining room size table and chairs, and then a grilling area. And it takes up more space than you think. And the other thing would be the discussion about a staircase, whether or not a staircase is important or needed. And a lot of times people don't realize that one of the most expensive parts of a deck is the staircase. And in a lot of walkout homes, they're really optional. Because you already have a staircase going out the basement, you may or may not need that or want that. So those are probably the two biggest topics that surprise people.
What about materials? Boy, you know, it had to be over 10 years ago, and maybe people are still requesting cedar-type wood decks. But and you told me way back then it was something like 80% of folks that are requesting low maintenance. I would imagine it's even higher now.
Yeah, your imagination is right. It's probably 99%. In fact, we don't really offer wood much anymore, unless we're trying to match something or existing, because we have some reasonably priced synthetic deck boards that are almost comparable. I mean, very comparable in price to a new wood deck. So that just doesn't make sense anymore. And Lindis tends to think, as you know, and you've had Andy on for years, we tend to think long-term in the products that we offer people, both for the benefit of the customer and the benefit of us having to solve and to service products in the future. So the synthetic ones seem to be the best as far as over time, how often we need to go back to address a problem that's happened. If it's a deck that was built out of wood, there's a higher chance we're going to have to go back and service that deck. So that's where it all comes from, and that's why.
If you're just joining us, Luke Panic, the deck and porch specialist, among other things, at Linda's Construction is with us. So if you have any kind of a question about decks, building, maintaining, whatever the case may be, the material. I know we always get questions about what material, what type of decks, brand name, whatever, does Linda's like to use? What do you prefer?
Our most popular one is a newer one that is accessible to us now called Millboard. Millboard is unique in its characteristics of, first and foremost, its appearance and its texture. It's very, very authentic. So people enjoy the way that it looks. It's the most realistic looking plank that I've seen. And it's extremely durable. It's not made with the traditional materials of PVC and sawdust. So it's got an edge for its durability and its appearance. So that's probably our go-to product. It is a little bit more costly to use it. So sometimes we have to find a more aggressive price tag for people and use something that's a little bit less costly. But for sure, it seems to be worth it for most people.
That Millboard is, according to Andy, and correct me if I'm wrong, he said it's not as slippery as some of the other composites, right?
Yes, I agree with that. It's really nice on the feet. It really tracks well. I gave it the ultimate test by putting it on a dock at one of my rental cabins, and just because, of course, he's swimming and kids are up and on them, in and out of boats, and it's just really, really nice even when it's wet.
How do you maintain stuff like that, maybe specifically that particular product, year after year? What is the maintenance like? Certainly not like cedar or other wood, but what do you do with that material?
Really nothing other than give it a bath. I recommend twice a year giving it a wash, just to clean out the little grooves that get pollen and, you know, outdoor dust that just seems to be out there everywhere. So I recommend giving it a wash, but that's about it.
Again, if you're just joining us, Luke Panic is with us from Linda's Construction, filling in for Andy this morning. Luke being the deck and porch specialist. If you have a question about decks or decking, porches, whatever, that's great. Otherwise, any other home improvement will work too, because, well, what projects, for those that don't know, I mean, you've built your own home. You grew up in the business, and were you not in the last couple of years since we spoke working on some other personal project?
Yeah, my weekend gig changed as my kids have gotten older and my time has become more my time. I've taken on some projects up in northern Minnesota to do vacation rental properties. So I find distressed and depressed cabins that would like to have a revision and update, and my wife and I enjoy bringing them back to life, giving them a fresh look, and then helping people with their vacations.
That's kind of a whole new career, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I'm up now. We're on our third one, and we're doing a brand new build. This one I've done with my three sons and my father. It's a team project that they now are at the age where they're through that teenage years where dads don't know anything, and now they're at the age where they're interested. And so it's been a panic university on how to build. And so we've done almost everything ourselves, from excavation. We rented machinery and did the foundation and the concrete, and we've done everything so that they can get a taste of each of those components of the project. And it's been taxing, but it's been really, really fun. In fact, I'm a paving contractor this weekend. I'm putting in a paver patio.
My goodness, that's a great education for them. Oh, yeah, that's well, there you go. So, listener, if you have any home improvement question, whatever the case may be, give us a call or send a text, whichever is easier. For Luke, 651-461-9226. Our home improvement show here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And a good Saturday morning to you. Denny Long here with Luke Panic. If you're just joining us, Luke is the deck and porch specialist, among other things, with Linda's Construction. Grew up in the construction biz, does a lot of stuff on his own, so he knows the construction business in a lot of ways, not just decks and decking and porches. So any kind of a home improvement question this morning, as usual, for Luke, 651-461-9226. Yeah, you can call it in or you can text it in like some folks are doing. A listener sent this in earlier this morning, Luke, about what temperature, like when, how cold does it have to get where you should not install doors and windows? I know Linda's does that anytime, but I mean, what do you say to that?
Well, I don't know that there's a specific temperature. And the reason I say that is because most of the time we're putting these windows and doors into a heated home. So even though that's the temperature outside, the home is, of course, heated. And so when we take the window out of the opening, it's warm. And all the work and the sealants and stuff that we use are, in, for the most part, a warm area. There are some cases where we can't use certain caulking outside. But what we would do in that case is, there's any time when we couldn't use a sealant to install a window on the outside for some reason, we would just come back right away in the spring when it warms up, or as soon as we get a 40-degree day. We really just need 40 degrees for just about any of the sealants. But for the most part, that doesn't seem to inhibit us at all. We're able to put in windows and doors all year long.
And there's, as Andy has talked about too, we've done this other shows, that people may think there's, you know, this big open space that seems to be there forever. But no, the installers don't. I mean, it's pretty fast turnaround. And that big space is covered pretty rapidly, right?
Well, yeah. And it's not that, you know, if you can imagine a house, if we took all the windows out at the same time, then we'd have a lot of holes open in there. But
right.
That's not
right.
What happens. You know, and of course, people don't, they just don't know, maybe they haven't been a part of a window project. But what happens is, there's a fair bit of time prepping the window to remove it. Once we remove the window from the hole, we've got most of the time, it's pretty quick to waterproof, put a new pan flashing, and the opening is only without a window for a very short, it might be 15 minutes. And then the brand new window goes back into the hole. So it's not open for very long. And then, again, now the most time that we have to engage in is installing the new window once it's in the opening. Now we've got to insulate around it, all the fasteners, all the trim on the inside and the outside. So most of the time is after that window is in the opening. The opening isn't open for very, very long at all. So I think that's a common misconception. It's like people sometimes say, wow, I want to wait till spring. It's going to get cold in here. It's like, well, not really. It, you know, 15 would be like having the door open for 15 minutes and then closing the door. So it's not too bad.
Yeah, absolutely. 651-461-9226. If you're just joining us, Lou Panic filling in for Andy Lindis this morning. As far as decks go, a listener sent a text earlier about when we were talking about wood decks versus the low-maintenance decks, maintenance-free. Price difference, they want to know. What you kind of alluded to that. I don't know if you expanded on that or could. And you said Lindis doesn't really deal with a lot of wood decks unless it's kind of repairing or whatever, but what's the price on a good millboard, let's say, versus a good quality wood? Big difference?
I would say it's probably about on the total of the project. And see, here's what you got to think about. It can be, you know, whether we do the best synthetic deck board on the planet or the cheapest wood, that's only one component of the deck. We still are going to put in the same footings. We're going to build the same frame. The labor is going to be the same. We're probably putting the same railing on the deck. So it's just the cost difference in the material of the actual decking. So that's why it might only be 20%, 25% tops, not even that sometimes. So it usually isn't much of, people are surprised to say, well, what if we did this in wood? I said, well, you know, it's not going to save you that much money in the long run anyway. And then you got to factor in, well, how are we going to keep it looking good? We got to factor in some costs that you wouldn't have with the aesthetic decking. So it's not a way to save money. Honestly, it's usually just not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's grab a phone call, Luke, this morning. I think Mark is calling in from Rosemont this morning. Thank you, Mark. What's your question for Luke Panic?
Yeah, great show. Thanks for the advice here. I've got a wood deck. It's about 25 years old, and I put it in myself. It doesn't attach to the house. I put it on concrete piers. I used treated joists, and I put on the top of the joist. The old deck rotted away, not only the decking, but the joists themselves rotted. So I put aluminum flashing on top of the joists. And then I used cedar decking material. So it was looking pretty bad here this spring, and cleaned it up and got my hands and knees and sanded it and put on a brightener, and then I put some sickens on it. And it's actually looking pretty good, so it's going to last. My question is, I only got one coat of sickens on, oil-based, and in the spring I intend to do another coat. Should I be doing any cleaning or sanding or anything before that next coat on, or should I just clean it up a little bit with a hose, let it dry out good, and just put another coat of sickens on it?
Mark, great question, and great job on taking care of your deck. Some of the things you did there were great ideas. You put an aluminum protection on top of your joists, which is, I'm sure, helped. Almost always now we put a flashing on top of our joists as well. So that was a good move. The cedar decking with the sickens on it, in between coats, I would only recommend cleaning it. Just giving it, making sure, just so you get good inner coat adhesion, I would want that sickens to be washed with a little bit of a mild detergent just to get it clean. So that's all I would do, is as long as you don't have any mold or mildew that's showing up on top of it, just to clean it good. If you have mold or mildew in some spots, maybe a brightener over there. But for the most part, because your first coat is so recent here, putting a second coat on would be a great idea in the spring as soon as it warmed up, and just give it a bath and let it dry good before you put that second coat on.
Yeah, that's a good product. You know, we've talked about that one for years here on CCU, along with Penafin. And good going. A labor of love. I tell you what, I'm getting a signal here, Luke. It's time for a break and looking at that forecast. So let's do that. We'll invite our listeners to join in. If you have, especially this morning, if you have any questions about decks or decking, this is your chance. Doesn't have to be. Can be any kind of a home improvement question. We welcome all at 651-461-9226 here at News Talk 830 WCCO. Stay with us. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our home improvement show, presented every week by our friends at Lindus Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. Andy Lindus taking the day off today. Our friend Luke Panic, the deck and porch specialist with Lindus Construction, is answering any kind of home improvement question you may have in mind today. Luke, the texter said earlier, if I can find it here, it's about ordering or having Lindus come out to the house to maybe get a deck. Can they get a deck built by next year sometime if they invite Lindus over, during the winter here?
Absolutely. That's probably the best time to have us out, because as things get cold, other things slow down, and we get, us deck salesmen get sick of looking in attics in the winter. So we'd much rather take a look at a deck. Sometimes it's a little bit more work to get around to the back of the house if there's a foot of snow, but we do a lot of deck designs and planning for spring and summer deck projects. So that's a great idea.
Yeah, get some ideas down on paper. And by the way, I want to mention, too, that whatever you're looking for, if you're looking for a new deck or new windows or siding, roofing, whatever the case may be, that first visit always free. That keep that in mind. That's always free. Again, 844-9-LINDUS if you want to check it out. Have them come to your house. This listener, by the way, here's our phone number. It's also our text number, 651-461-9226. Texter says this, Luke, we have a composite material deck that was installed by a licensed contractor back in 2008. The deck boards were attached by screws every 12 inches and not by clips. You'll have to tell me what that is. We've noticed that there's a lot of warping of the deck boards. Is this due to how it was installed, or is it just past the lifetime of the boards?
Likely, it's not how it was installed. Likely what has happened is either the boards themselves, you know, I wish I knew what the composite decking was, but a lot of the composites that contain a significant amount or a higher percentage of sawdust in them just don't handle our extreme temperature changes here that well, and they warp. Or what it can be is that the installer used a pressure-treated, really a wet frame, I call it, a pressure-treated pine that has not been kiln-dried. And so it's very, very damp and wet when it gets installed. And then when the joists shrink as they dry out over the years and they move, it causes the decking to look like it's warping, even though it's really the fault of the frame. So I like that I'm hearing that there's screws every 12 inches that suggests that the frame was built with joists at 12 inches, which is really good. But you can still get the waviness and the warping of the deck boards with a frame if the lumber was very wet.
Very good. I'm looking at more texts that are coming in. There's one. And maybe you can describe how Lindus builds these low-maintenance decks. Here's their question. What is the easiest to install and best type of deck support pier footings? Let's explain what those are.
Well, if it's a homeowner project, you really have two options. You can use a traditional cylindrical footing where you excavate a hole 42 to 48 inches in the ground and put a sonotube in the ground and fill it with concrete and rebar. And then backfill it. That is something a homeowner could do. As easy as buying some bags of concrete and some rebar and some and a solo tube from a sono tube, excuse me, from Menards or Home Depot or Arrow Building Center, wherever. That's probably the most common way homeowners do it. The second option would be to buy a diamond pin pier, which we've talked about those over the years. We don't use them anymore. We've had them fail, so we've not been using them. But a diamond pin pier, for the most part, works quite well. And those come with a kit, basically, that has a concrete diamond that's about the size of a basketball, but looks like a diamond-shaped product. And it's pins that are galvanized pipes, usually inch and a quarter. And these pins are about 4 feet long. And the pins get driven through pre-mortised holes that are in that concrete diamond down at an angle, so it creates a kind of a tripod underground. And that you can simply rent a jackhammer, a handheld jackhammer, and you can drive those pins in right into the ground through that concrete diamond. And I'm sure there's YouTube videos out there that would show examples of this, so you can visualize it. But those a homeowner could do. The pin piers are far easier to install and less laborious than excavating a hole and, you know, mixing concrete and all that jazz, for sure. The best footing, of course, is the helical pier that we install, and many other deck companies are starting to use them as well. That's not really something a homeowner can do because you need a very expensive piece of machinery to come out and even to have access to them. You need to be a distributor of them, and they're difficult.
What is that?
Those are the best.
What does that look like, that last one you mentioned?
The helical pier? It looks, it's about a 3-inch steel galvanized pipe that's about 60 inches long. And at the very bottom of it, it's got a like a screw bottom on it. So it like an ice auger that you drill a hole in the ice, kind of looks like that. And so what happens is we have a machine with an auger head on it that has a pressure reading gauge on it, and it starts spinning that pipe into the ground, and it just pulls itself right down into the earth. And it we need them to get the its capacity of holding weight is determined by the pressure that's put on that screw. So other case, if you put it in real fluffy, you know, fluffy, loamy, swampy soil, you to get the pressure you need, you may have to go down 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet. If you've got decent soil, you usually can just go down the 5 feet and you're done. So these are used all over the world. They're used all over different types of construction for big retaining walls as deadman type retainers. They're used for a lot of different reasons. They're even used to resurrect, lift buildings up out of the ground that have sunk. So there's a number of different things to use them, but that's what they look like, and they're really ideal for where we live.
You've kind of addressed the soil issue. It was going to be my next question. Does type of soil depend, on which kind of pier you use? But it sounds like for the most part, at least in our neck of the woods, that particular type would work in maybe not in all cases, but in many or most, huh?
Pretty much. My earlier years when I was building homes, we did a house in Mendota Heights that had unsuitable soil. Loamy and water table was very high and stuff. And we put in 50 or 60 of those helical piers that went anywhere from 60 to 80 feet in the ground. So you can imagine what that would look like. Yeah. And the houses that were across the street that had traditional footings, all of the bearing walls had sunk. So, you know, their walls were all crooked and sunk, you know. So we knew this going in, because we knew the soil was, we had a soil engineer do the testing. But that was my first interaction with them. There's very few companies that did it. There's a company that's been around in the Twin Cities forever called Atlas Foundation. And they put in all those footings with a big, and those are different size. Those are bigger ones when you use them for a house, and they use a backhoe with a big auger. And but it was absolutely fascinating. It's so stable. Once you put those in, the soil, all the dirt could wash away underneath that house 50 feet down, and that house would still stand there without moving. It's kind of fascinating to do a picture, but really effective.
Unbelievable. By the way, if you have any kind of a home improvement question, we'd love to hear from you. We still have time for your 651-461-9226. Another text, Luke. We put in a paver sidewalk. Ants, the critters, stir up the sand underneath. As a result, the pavers have shifted over the season and years. Did we miss a step, do you think, in our installation, or do you run into this and have a solution?
Well, as I said earlier in the show, I'm in the midst of putting in a paver patio myself. And what I know of as the steps is a good heavy base of class 5, 6 to 10 inches, perhaps, depending on what it's used for, and then an inch of sand, and then the paver. I don't know how you stop ants. I don't know that there's a barrier or something you're supposed to use. I mean, because they all sit on, you know, the pavers are sitting directly on top of an inch of sand. And I suppose that's just heaven for, you know, nice clean sand too. You got to use really nice clean sand without your rot, you know, walk. I don't know how you could stop ants from doing what ants do. I guess I would put on some spray or have a local exterminator, you know, pest control company come out and maybe treat for them, I guess. I don't think you necessarily missed a step. I think it's just something, a battle you got to fight.
Well, you mentioned the class 5. I don't, unless the texter just didn't put that in. They said they put in the paver sidewalk and the ants stirred up the sand underneath. Maybe there was no rock underneath, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, that could be over the years. The only thing in my time, landscaping companies typically do paver work. It's not usually associated with construction companies. But what I've noticed over the years is the ones that a lot of times I see them underneath decks where people have paver patios underneath their deck. And here in swampy Minnesota, if people didn't use enough class 5 underneath that paver patio, they heave terribly and they buckle apart, and they can look, I've seen them look very bad, and then I've seen some that look, you know, perfect, that have been there for many years, and the difference is ultimately, like just about any project, the preparation that you do, making sure that you've got a solid base of Class 5 that's compacted, and then the sand on top, I think is everything. I think that's really important. So it may not. Maybe it's just soft soil underneath those pavers, and it's invited a colony of ants.
That sounds like it's a possibility. Luke, hang on. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, a listener wants to give some options. Well, Linda's has some ideas for rail systems on these new decks. Evidently, they haven't had a deck in many, many years. They want to know some what's come down the pike and what Linda's uses can offer with the railing systems on decks. Good question. We'll take this break, come right back with Luke Panic from Linda's Construction here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to the remaining minutes of our Home Improvement Show. We are here every Saturday thanks to Linda's Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S, every Saturday in the 9 o'clock hour here on CCO. This morning, Andy Lindis is taking the day off. Our friend Luke Panic, deck and port specialist, among other things, with Lindis Construction, is answering all of your home improvement questions. If you have any other deck questions, that'd be great. We still have a few minutes to answer those as well. Before the break, we posed that question from a listener about what kind of rail systems are available that Lindis can offer these days for decks.
Well, the current railing that we suggest as our go-to railing is made by a company called RDI. They've got a great website. You can go look if you just type in RDI railing. And probably the most common one is their aluminum system. And it comes, metal railings are, specifically aluminum, are our most common rail system to recommend for people. They're the most trouble-free. It seems like when you combine different woods and aluminums and metals and sleeves and posts, and when you combine different types of materials, you're asking for trouble over time. So what we like to use is aluminum railing. It seems to be a popular design element, too. That's a common look that people are looking for. My favorite part about it is typically people want to be able to see. They want something that is as transparent as possible so that you can see the deer in the backyard or the turkeys or the lake or the golf course or whatever. And so it also allows you the darker color, which usually aluminum railing is going to be black or bronze, it allows you to see through it the best. And so it, without having to clean glass or something, it's about the most transparent railing that you can get. So that's probably our most common rail system. We can do others, and sometimes people want white and mix and match. We can do, we can do anything. But that is predominantly the most common railing that we advise.
All right. Very good. Sounds neat. Looking at another text from a listener that said, I had gutters replaced because of hail damage. They put the wrong kind on. They're not saying what kind that was. Certainly wasn't LeafGuard. And we'll be replacing again soon. Should I be concerned about all the holes being put through my fascia? It's aluminum clad, and it's too high for me to get up there and look. How would you address that question?
Well, it's a good question. And where those holes are located, where they're located on the fascia board, and if they're sealed back up or not is important to know. Not all companies install gutters the same way. So it's free to have a Lindis guy come out and take a look at it and see if that needs to be dealt with. I'll tell you this, we run into a lot of rotten fascia boards that look like they're okay. And then we go to put on the new gutter, and it's just mush behind there. So there's a number of ways that water can get behind a fascia board, ranging from drip edge issues to holes. But it can certainly be a concern, and it should probably be looked at.
Yeah, I hope that listener takes the time to call Lindis and at least check out the LeafGuard gutter system. We've had ours on for like close to 30 years, and it's an amazing product. Plus, Lindis looks out for that bad wood. So, yeah, 844-9-LINDIS for whatever project you may have in mind. Now, listen, as you know, Luke, we have very smart listeners, and this is a comment from one about the moving patio. The pavers, the paver patio, you should use granite sand. Ants do not like sharp rocks. So there's a hint. I've never seen granite sand, but I haven't been everywhere.
I was at Menards this morning at 6 o'clock when they opened to buy sand to put between the cracks of the pavers. Granite wasn't an option. It was just called leveling sand. So I don't know what kind of sand I got. Hopefully it doesn't attract ants.
Okay. I'd like to, we just have a minute or two to go here. Texter says, I'd like to replace my deck with a four-season porch. Would the footings need to be bigger or more of them?
Yes, absolutely. Great question and a common misconception. Sometimes people think they've got a deck back there and we're just going to put a building on it. No, can't use those old footings unless we know what they are. Sometimes people put in bigger footings in for a future project potentially. But if you don't know that, a deck load is not the same as a living space load. And the reason is that you're going to put a roof load on it that's going to hold snow. And it's going to hold a lot more weight, windows and walls and all that stuff, and attics all add up. So the live load requirements for a four-season porch are different than that of a deck. So likely you will need bigger footings and you will need more of them.
All right, one more text before we let you go, Luke. Are cable rail systems for decks really expensive?
About double. Cable rail systems are more expensive, for sure. Why? I don't know. There must be gold in the cable. I don't know. To me, they shouldn't cost that much more, but they just do. They're about twice as much as a traditional railing.
We're out of time, Luke. It was always a pleasure having you on the radio, and we certainly hope you and your family and the rest of the good Lindis folks have a great, happy Thanksgiving.
And to you.
Thanks, Luke. I know we'll join forces once again when Andy takes some more time off. I know it'll happen. Thank you. Luke Panik, the deck and port specialist with Lindis Construction. Looks like a partly sunny skies today. Highs near 40. We drop to 34 overnight, mostly cloudy tomorrow. It's going to be a little warmer, probably the warmest day of the week, maybe for a while. 44 the high tomorrow because Thanksgiving Day looks cloudy with 28 the daytime high. Friday, 21 the high. Denny Long, thanks for listening. Thanking you for your company, and thank you, Ryan Perpich. Happy Thanksgiving.